The human genome is a code 3 billion base pairs long that contains the instructions for our cells to make proteins and, ultimately, us. In 2003, scientists successfully completed the Human Genome Project, managing to sequence every single one of these pairs. But it turns out that was just the beginning. It was like we had the blueprints for how to make a human, but no idea how to interpret it. What did this vast series of A's, T's, C's, and G's actually encode? Researchers now think it contains between 21 and 25,000 genes for proteins. But there's also a huge amount going on in the rest of the genome. For one thing, lots of it doesn't code for protein at all. It codes for sections of RNA that have a function in and of themselves. And there are at least a million stretches of DNA in the genome, known as switches or elements, that are involved in turning genes on or off, or changing their levels of expression. Picking up where the Human Genome Project left off, ENCODE, which stands for Encyclopedia of DNA Elements, is an ambitious project to identify all of these elements and how they affect gene expression. This week, several papers on the third iteration of the project, ENCODE 3, have been published in Nature. Rick Myers, from the Hudson Alpha Institute for Biotechnology in the US, has been part of the project since it began. He explained to me why these areas of the genome are of such interest.
You don't get to be a liver cell or a neuron by expressing the entire genome. You have subsets of the genes being activated and others being inactivated. And the hope was to identify these switches and what turns those switches on and off in different cell types. So when ENCODE started in 2003, it was a pilot project, really looking at only 1% of the genome. So then the second phase of ENCODE was to do that on a genome-wide level. And then ENCODE 3 that we're talking about now greatly, greatly expanded that so that we're not only looking genome-wide, we're looking at a lot of different cell types and starting to learn a whole lot more detail of this atlas, essentially, like a collection of maps, but now putting these maps together so that they make sense.
So can you give us a sense of the scale of this? How many of these switches have you identified in ENCODE 3?
So now, with ENCODE 3, we've identified in the human genome, identified almost a million of these switches. There may be, well be more of them. These are the ones we've identified in a few dozen different cell types. As an aside, we also, during this phase, did a mouse ENCODE project. There's several hundred thousand in the mouse that are identified. And having the interplay between those two organisms, the data sets, has been really helpful for interpreting the human genome, for instance.
And part of ENCODE 3 was trying to figure out how these million or so switches affect gene expression when bound by different molecules in the cell, which could be proteins or even RNA. So what are some of the molecules that you were looking at?
A big push was on the DNA binding proteins that are called transcription factors, proteins that bind to DNA or bind to other proteins bound to DNA and turn genes on or off or determine the levels of the genes in different cell types and at different times during development. And there are a lot of them. 1,600 of these means that we put a lot of our genome and the energy made into making cells into controlling when and where all the genes get expressed. In addition to what we call transcription factors, there are other more general DNA binding proteins that are called chromatin regulators. They play a role in what the whole genome looks like in a particular cell at any time, in terms of opening up regions of the genome for transcription or helping to keep them closed. So that was another really important part of ENCODE because they bind to many, many more places in the genome than do transcription factors.
So what form does all of this data actually take?
So ENCODE 3 is the first time we actually generated the encyclopedia, which is freely available to everyone. It has all the annotations that ENCODE has generated to date, genes, the switches, transcriptomes, epigenetics, and many different cell types. And it's organized and meant to be easy to use. So computational biologists and many creative scientists in this helped to build tools to take these very large complex data sets in huge numbers of different contexts and get out what you want to look at.
I mean, looking back, how does these kinds of data sets and tools that you've used to build this encyclopedia, how do they compare to what you were using back in the 90s when the Human Genome Project was set up?
it's fun for me, at least, to look back on the history of this. When we started the Human Genome Project in 1990, the goal was to figure out one person's or one composite human genome sequence. Truth is, we really didn't know how we were going to do it. The technology was pretty crude back then. And in 1990, the internet didn't exist, or at least we weren't using it yet. We were copying data onto floppy disks and, you know, providing that to people as much as we could. And of course, in that subsequent 30 years, we've had enormous increases in computational ability. And thank goodness we do, because the amount of data we have is millions of times more than what we had in 1990.
In lots of ways, this is basic science, really. You're trying to annotate the genome to figure out what these different elements are and what they do and how they affect gene expression. But scientists are using the data, and there are practical applications too. Have you got any examples you can share?
Yes. So one of them is a severe gastrointestinal disorder in babies. The cause was unknown. And researchers used ENCODE data to identify particular switches that controls the expression of a gene that was suspected to be involved in this terrible disorder in babies. They tested the region, and sure enough, it was involved in regulating the gene in the digestive system. And that actually identified then the cause of this disease that is also probably related to many other similar diseases in children and even some adults. And that example is one of many, many where being able to understand how the gene is expressed and how the regulation of the gene is controlled has helped to understand and even work their way towards not just diagnosis and prognosis, but treatments.
So ENCODE 3 is now available in the form of this encyclopedia, but things don't stop there. What's happening with the next phase of the project?
ENCODE 4 is well underway. The goals in ENCODE 4 are greatly expanding the data collection. A lot more cell types are being included, and we're really working towards analyzing all 1,600 transcription factors and all the chromatin marks. That's some of the major goals. One of the really important parts about ENCODE 4 is actually integrating all of these data types. You don't have one little element and one protein controlling the expression of a gene. You have a massive group of components that interact to give you that specificity of cell type, when it's going to be expressed, and when it happens during development.
Rick Myers from the Hudson Alpha Institute for Biotechnology. The data from ENCODE 3 is available at encodeproject.org, and as Rick says, it's completely free for researchers to use with no restrictions. And you can read the accompanying papers on ENCODE 3 at nature.com.